Your favorite band's about to play a sold-out show. You got in.
Over here!
With a friend. And found a spot close enough to see the set list. They're definitely playing your song. When you're with Amex, it's not if it's going to happen, but when. American Express. Don't live life without it.
Hello, humans. Welcome to Not You, Guillermo, What We Do in the Shadows podcast, brought to you by The Dip. I'm Patrick Monahan.
And I'm Nicole Conlon. This week, we're going to recap episodes 1 and 2 of season 3 of What We Do in the Shadows. Let's dive in, shall we?
So episode 1 is called The Prisoner. This is when we find out kind of what's happening with everyone after the crazy events of the end of season 2. And we open. It's been about a month since the big bloodbath. Guillermo is in jail in the basement in a cage that it's remarkably built out dungeon they have for a house in Staten Island, I have to say. And he's been in there and they are trying to figure out what to do. True to form, the rest of the house can't come to a decision on something. And basically the sticking point is Nandor, who doesn't necessarily, you know, he respects that Guillermo, as a fellow warrior, I guess, stuck up for them, and everyone else is ready to distance themselves as soon as possible to keep themselves.
I mean, distance themselves is putting it lightly. They're ready to kill Guillermo.
Yes. But even in the way they talk, they're like, you know, Nandor's familiar versus our familiar and that kind of stuff. So that, yeah, it's pretty clear where the divide is. They do feed him. They throw uncooked chicken breast packs at him. That's his food while he's down there.
And he also has the yoo-hoos that were in the mini fridge.
Yes, that's right. It turns out he has a very easy way to remove part of the cage and go out. And what he's been doing when he's been escaping, instead of escaping the property entirely, is doing all of the house tasks that he would normally have to do and occasionally going out to eat. We can talk about something that I found very disturbing about when he went out
okay,
to eat.
Okay, I'm glad that you're bringing it up because it was also in my notes because should we talk about it now?
I mean, to me, it's the most jarring thing from the episode. It
Who
probably
the fuck
not-
eats a sandwich by cutting into it with a knife and a fork? What on earth, Guillermo? This, to me, this has to come back later in the season because it was so shocking. I almost, like, made us rewind to make sure I didn't, like, hallucinate it.
Yeah. I was doing a list of his like powers, like in like the things that have been going on with him. And that's the one where I had about 100 exclamation points at the end of, he goes to a, I don't know if it's a diner or a fast food place or something.
It looks like some kind of burger place, like whatever the Staten Island version of like Whataburger is.
Yeah. And he sits down and, he's got a burger and fries and he primly takes out a knife and fork and begins cutting into the burger, not even cutting into the middle, cutting into like
the side, like it's like he's eating a steak, but it's a hamburger.
Yes. So anyway, that's the main thing that happened this episode. That's about all we need to talk about. No. So he's been escaping and, you know, not letting them know that he's been doing that. Eventually, he sees a smoky figure kind of crawling into the house from the outside and runs.
He's set up security cameras around the house so he can surveil in case vampires come to attack his pals.
Right. All he wants to do is protect them. All he wants to do is, you know, basically take care of them, despite everything that's happened. And so he blows his own cover, runs up and says, and starts attacking the smoky special effects monster. And it turns out it's the floating woman, otherwise known as the guide, who we met the first season, I guess, right? Played by Kristen Schaal, the sort of assistant or office manager of the Vampiric Council. And she has a message from the Supreme Worldwide Vampiric Council. So we're getting a better sense, like we said, of the org chart a little bit.
Yes, tons of org chart stuff in this episode. I'm glad that we set up org chart in our first episode because we're going to be touching on that a lot.
Yeah.
But this also answers the question that we asked in the first episode, which is, are these only tri-state area vampires? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
The vampires that were defeated were from the New York area.
Yeah. Those were all the big shots in the tri-state area. And they were I think it's the East Atlantic Vampiric Council is sort of the ruling body over there, over Staten Island. But so anyway, so we have a VHS that they play, keeping it classic, I guess, a little more analog. And it's Viago, who is Taika Waititi from from the movie and from various other things.
Ever heard of him?
Yeah, exactly.
Listeners?
So I guess he's the big boss. I don't know. Or he's at least the mouthpiece for the Supreme Worldwide Council. And one of our predictions came true. They just moved up in the world. And that basically is because they were impressed. There was not really a whole lot of deliberating over that. It was just if you kill one vampire, that's like not allowed. But if you kill 37 or 38 vampires, you know how to get things done. That was the way it was described. So they get a promotion.
Yeah, it's a real St. Bartholomew's Massacre. That's for nobody. I just learned what St. Bartholomew's Massacre was last week. So trying to shove it in where I can.
St. Bartholomew's Massacre. Check it out. Wikipedia, whatever you know. So now they're the head of the council themselves, and that's basically where. Oh, and then obviously they have to decide what to do with Guillermo. Now they know he's out of the cage, and after some deliberation, they leave him in a little bit of suspense, and they decide, along with their promotion, they decide to make him a full part of the team. He understandably thinks that means they're going to make him a vampire, and of course not. He is not a vampire. Mm-hmm. He becomes a bodyguard. That is his job. The vampire's bodyguard, coming to you soon, Samuel Jackson.
And then the vampire's wife's bodyguard.
Yes, exactly.
And then expanding that universe.
Yeah. So that's where things stand. He's not he's not becoming a vampire. We're still at, does it go down or up? I forget. We're at Deathcon 5, I guess, right? That's the low one.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, okay.
He's at Deathcon 5. So I think he moves closer to becoming a vampire, but not by much.
Okay, so we'll put him at 4, I guess, because he was at 5 before, because they were probably going to kill
him. Deathcon 4.
Yeah.
By the way, we're saying Deathcon with a TH, not an F.
That's right.
Just a little joke for the listeners at home.
Yeah, please. Okay. When you have to explain it, that's how you know it's really a classic pun. That's where things stand the end of episode 1. Let's see. What do we want to talk about? What are the big takeaways here?
Okay. Well, the first thing that I would like to talk about is Colin Robinson is obsessed with Guillermo's shit bucket.
Yeah, Colin Robinson goes off. He's like off the rails. He's wild this episode. Like he's very he's much more expressive. He kind of yells a lot in a way that he doesn't really otherwise. I guess the stress of the situation gets to him a little bit or something. I don't really know what. We find out that he's really concerned about what's in the bathroom bucket. He's got a whole scat thing going, I guess.
Now, I thought this was going to be like, if you ever talk to like a health person and they're like, you can actually really learn a lot about like your gut biome if you really closely examine your feces every day. And I thought he was going to use that as a way to like drain like the energy from other people just by this incredibly boring like gut flora conversation. But it didn't seem to be that. It just seemed like he's really into poop play.
Yeah, it seems like we found something that like the first thing that he actually enjoys that isn't just relate to feeding on people. So that's a peek behind the curtain there, I guess. A little upsetting. I did like that Viago called him Colin Rubenstein, which he was not impressed by. He kind of did not love that one. Yeah, so Colin Robinson he's a little bit, I don't know. He was thrilled to be, you know, like the Milgram experiment. He would be the guy shocking everybody, basically. He had the cattle prod.
He also had like a little cattle prod that he kept trying to use, but he couldn't figure out how to use it. And he kept hurting himself on it, which does pertain to the question of what kills Colin Robinson. And I don't think it's electricity, but electricity apparently hurts him.
It annoys him for sure. Are you okay? And he said, no, you know, so we'll keep that in our back pocket. If he gets shocked with a cattle prod, it might,
be how you defeat Colin Robinson.
Yeah. But yeah, he kept very, very kind of imperious, you know, the prisoner will remember, you know, that kind of theatrical wardening, I guess, is what he was doing.
Now, I felt like they were also setting up Laszlo to be much surlier this season also. He was very like, fuck all this. I don't want to do this. I didn't become a vampire to become a bureaucrat. That's the best Matt Berry I can do. But in episode 1, Laszlo says he does not want to be on the throne. He's not one of the three who's fighting for the throne. He like lets them take it. Not his deal.
He's super not interested. He just wants to. Yeah, I think he says kill and or drink blood and fuck forever, I think is what his goals were in becoming a vampire. and, you know, admirable. I think that's fair. But yeah, it's kind of a light, you know, and I think, you know, Laszlo doesn't have a lot to do in the first episode for sure. There's no like Laszlo plot. I mean, there's not really anybody that's off on their own too much, but he's sort of part of the chorus more than like a main, you know, we do get him and Nadia give us a good rundown of the different types of hypnosis things that can go wrong, which go beyond the brain scramblies, which happened to Sean, their neighbor, at the Super Bowl party.
There's the big purple head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to see somebody get the big purple head.
Half man, half madness, which has an awesome illustration of like a three-headed guy running into a bedroom with a knife and there's a fire-breathing dragon or something. So, yeah. So we do get some important information. And we also learn that Guillermo, I mean, generally, we'll talk about Guillermo like in general here. But first, like Nadia, you know, she wants to kill Guillermo. So does the doll Nadia, who obviously has the same sort of general takes as Nadia, unsurprisingly. But she is disenfranchised by Nandor, shamefully. But Nadia, you know, yeah, she wants to be in charge, is definitely more into it than Laszlo is. Otherwise, yeah. I also like she does a very good spooky ooh noise, which I really enjoy when they were announcing the different things that when they were pronouncing Guillermo's sentence, I guess we'll call it. But yeah, Guillermo Greenberg de la Cruz is he's so we've
That's
learned
what they call him.
Yes. We've learned that he's unfailingly loyal. We've learned that he is apparently immune to vampiric hypnosis now, but he pretends for their benefit.
Yes, because they used it too much on him.
They wasted it.
So he's sort of become inured. It's a little bit of a Princess Bride poison scenario.
Yes, they gave him,
Iocane powder. That's what I'm looking for.
Yes. They asked him, like, hey, pick that thing up. And he said, oh, you know, and that's, yeah, that's not how you want to burn your hypnosis on somebody. But yeah, and he also eats a burger with a fork and knife. So that's sort of
I will never get past it. So we're also seeing sort of an interesting power dynamic between Nandor and Nadia, because Nandor is, you know, a famous warrior who destroyed Nadia's village. And now he's taken on a much more, like both in episodes one and two, but we'll just stick to episode one for now. He's much more loyal to Guillermo, partially because of the warrior's code that he talks about. He's like a little bit less aggressive in getting the throne.
Yeah, he's kind of a little sad, it seems like. Yeah. And you see it more in episode two, where we're seeing kind of what everyone's arc is, at least emotionally.
Yeah, episode one was a big plot episode just to like resolve everything from last season and set up what like the season long arc is going to be for season three. So there was less time to get into like character stuff because they had so much plot ground to cover.
Yeah, they had a lot of shit bucket related content to make sure that they covered
so much. They had to think of, God, I wonder if they just have a big doc somewhere that's full of shit euphemisms for Colin Robinson to say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm picturing a whiteboard or something in a writer's room it's just nightmarish. I'm trying to remember some of them. There was one that I really didn't like involving pickles. I can't remember what the full
stinky pickles.
Don't care for it.
Yuck. No, thank you.
Yeah. That's episode one. My favorite moment, I think, of episode one was at the very beginning when everyone's kind of freaked out and figuring out what's going to happen. And Colin just starts rambling and they basically tell him to shut up. And he says,
I guess I should just shut the fuck up then.
I'm not objecting.
You can tell he's really under a lot of stress.
He's getting more and more aggressive. He also was wearing that cream colored suit with a big bow tie the whole time.
Yes.
Which is a little different from normal.
Not immune, I guess.
No, we're seeing much more of a personality from Colin Robinson. And I don't know if it is some of the lingering effects of him getting so much power in season two, episode seven, I think, or if this is a sort of a new development for him, because he's about to turn 100 this season also. So maybe maybe he's feeling a little old, but I don't know. We'll talk more about that after the break.
What's that place you've always wanted to try?
Well, you're there. Sharing plates with
just one bite.
Or on second thought, maybe not sharing. It's that good. When you're with Amex, it's not if it's going to happen, but when. American Express. Don't live life without it.
Welcome back. This was a very special week because we didn't get one episode. It was a twofer. A two-ther, if you will. I wish it, God, it's tough to make the F and TH jokes in an audio medium because you can't really, the whole fun is that they sound the same, whatever. Regardless, it's a twofer, and we got a second episode. And this one was more able to explore the world once they resolved all of those plot issues. Kind of open on Talking Heads, with all of them talking about assuming power. Laszlo reiterates that he doesn't want anything to do with it. Nadia vows to, like, beat everybody else aside so that she can take the throne. She's a real vampiric girl boss about it. And then there's a very funny talking head with Nandor, with Guillermo standing in the background, and he keeps talking about how he wants to sit on the throne and produce a number two, and he doesn't get why it's funny. I guess presumably vampires don't poop. Maybe that's why Colin Robinson is so obsessed with Guillermo's?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but Nandor and Nadia are pretending that they're working together. They're kind of like, you know, co-chairs, or, you know, mm-hmm. and what's actually happening is each one is planning on betraying the other one. That's the sort of state of things.
Yes, they are. They have resolved to share power, and then they each, in their talking head, tell the camera that they're only doing this until they can seize power for themselves. The whole time. So in this episode, we also find out more about the Vampiric Council HQ, which also it's just in like an office building, and Vampiric Council is clearly labeled on the basement, like on the list of all of the offices and stuff, which is funny. So in the basement, there is this like, oh, there's a, what's the name of the room? It's like a treasure trove of all of this mystical
stuff. Yeah, it's the Chamber of Curiosities.
Chamber of Curiosities. And so there's like a bunch of stuff in there. It is, I think we're going to see in future episodes, there is the world's oldest vampire kept in some sort of chamber within the chamber. The Sire. And he apparently is the vampire from which all other vampires are born, which is so funny that he's in Staten Island for some reason and not in like Transylvania.
Yeah. What's the I'm picturing
for,
the guy.
For convenience of the plot, he's in Staten Island.
They move him around, you know. It's like the Stanley Cup.
Yes, exactly. And Colin Robinson like opens like the little slot where you put his food or whatever. And he like blows horrible vampire gases at him. And within the chamber is also this thing called the Cloak of Duplication, which we sort of speculated about last week. But this week we found out that what it is like a person touches it. So in this case, Nandor touched it with his face. And then whoever puts the cloak on turns into that person who touched it. So now anybody who wears the cloak looks like Nandor. How this is used in the episode is that Nandor has a gym membership, which we'll talk about in a second. But Nandor has a gym membership and he has fallen in love with the woman Meg who works at the front desk. But he clams up whenever he tries to talk to her. So he tries to send Laszlo, who is a real ladies man, to talk to her. And then Colin Robinson, Laszlo, and Guillermo all put on the cloak and try to talk to her in turn. And none of them have any success with her. Here's my big question, and we'll get to the rest of the plot of the episode in a second. It's revealed that Guillermo got Nandor this gym membership, and it's a 24-hour gym, which is a fun place for a vampire to be overnight.
Massive fitness,
yes. Why did Guillermo get Nandor a gym membership? Nandor has vampire strength. That, like, I don't think he needs to work out. I think vampires just have it.
Yeah, he wants him to
get out of the house, I guess.
Yeah. I guess he can work out some of whatever aggression is kicking around in there. You gotta, maybe he can make, yeah, he can, he kind of wants to make friends in a way that is not appealing by kind of like standing like crotch first over a guy who's trying to bench or whatever.
I've been to a lot of gyms where that is sort of how you make friends.
Yeah. Well, he is the weird guy.
How do you think you offer a spot? You got to just look at some guy's balls. It's right there.
It's when right you're benching. There.
So while this plot is happening, with Nandor's duplicates trying to get a date with Meg and being very offensive and getting thrown out of the gym, Colin Robinson tries negging her. She calls the big buff gym manager. He gets thrown out. Laszlo goes in and he tries showing her some of the most vile pornography she's ever seen, because Laszlo has now gone to the chamber's library and it has like all the porn in the history of the world. She freaks out, calls the manager. He gets thrown out, but he also hypnotizes her so she won't remember anything of what just happened. And then Guillermo puts on the cloak and goes, and they like go out for a smoothie. And then he has a very honest conversation where he, pretending to be Nandor, talks about how he like doesn't appreciate Guillermo enough, but he does love him in his way. But also it's Guillermo talking about Nandor. And so then Meg thinks that Nandor is in love with some guy named Guillermo who he works with. And then when real Nandor goes back at the end of the episode, Meg is like, oh, I thought you were in love with Guillermo. And he's like, what? Really? And then she reveals throughout every time a man fails in this episode to entice Meg, they come back and they're like, she's clearly not into dudes. And then at the end, it's revealed that Meg is a lesbian, which is funny.
Yeah. Good payoff.
Yeah.
Very good. Multifaceted Cyrano de Bergerac situation. Uh-huh. I love the endless patience of the gym employee for getting hit on in decreasingly obnoxious ways. Take your pick of whether Collins or Laszlo's is worse. I think Collins is probably worse because he's just straight
Collins
up mean.
Collins is worse because it's not even true negging. It's just insults.
It's just rude.
He opens with, hey, dipshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the most important part of all of this that we have to talk about is that Kayvon Novak, who plays Nandor, does impressions of all of his castmates. So it sounds like their voices are coming out of his body, and they're incredible.
Calm down, Toots. So sensitive. Let me cut to the chisel.
Please, good lady. I know I came here earlier, but whatever I said, and I don't remember, I wasn't myself.
Well, you started by calling me dipshit, so...
Proof of nought but mine own delirium.
It's been real busy at the moment, and I feel kind of bad because, you know, my best friend, he actually got me this gym membership, and I don't really use it, so... he's called Guillermo, by the way.
Yeah, if you're not paying close attention, you would think it was dubbed. Like, you wouldn't realize, basically. He nails the mannerisms, and he pitches his voice just enough that... It's quite, you know, like, I think Matt Berry has the most distinctive voice, so that's probably the one you would notice if you were kind of half paying attention, mm-hmm. that it's not him, but the other two are kind of spot on. I believe he does a lot of voice acting work, and I can see why, because he's very good. He's like a,
yeah.
you
it's
know,
like,
contortionist.
It was shocking. There's an episode of Third Rock from the Sun where Dick and Sally trade bodies, and they have to act as each other, and it's amazing, and they only have to do one person for the whole episode. Kayvon had to do three different people. It's wild. He also, now at one point, Nadja and Kristen Schaal, both the guide, both also put on the cloak of duplication and become Nandor, but I think their voices were dubbed.
Yeah, I believe so.
Presumably because he, despite being a very talented voice actor, couldn't approximate a woman's voice in the same way that he could with two men,
yes.
particularly two very distinct women's voices.
Yes, I was going to say Kristen Schaal in particular. It's like, yeah, I don't know how that's a tall order.
Yeah, good luck with that. Okay, so while the Jim and Nandor's love life plot is happening on one side, on the other side, Nandor and Nadja have to figure out how to share power. And the first thing that comes up is there is this house full of young vampires who haven't paid like their union dues or whatever. So Nadja and Nandor go to the house to try to get them to pay their union dues. And Colin Robinson comes along and they make Colin Robinson take notes. And then when they get there, they do a little bit of a good cop, bad cop, where Nandor tries to reason with them. He wants to kind of be a vampire of the people. And Nadja wants to intimidate them into just paying their dues now. This is a house full of, like, you know, the word hipster has become so overused to have lost all meaning. But it's like a house full of fucking hipster young vampires who they don't feel like they need to abide by the social structures of historical vampire living, you know? My favorite part of this episode is the young energy vampire, who's a guy who's really into talking about different strains of weed and drones. And just as somebody who's dated various iterations of that guy over the past 10 years, couldn't have picked a better guy to be an energy vampire. And this guy, like, is thrilled to meet Colin Robinson because Colin Robinson is, like, a legend of energy draining. We also, an interesting thing in this episode is Colin Robinson does not know how he became an energy vampire.
And neither does the other guy.
Neither does the other guy. And we were trying to figure it out last episode. And my theory is that because, like, vampires, to become a vampire, they have to drink your blood and then you have to taste of their blood. I think it's an energy vampire drains you, but then you are inherently so boring that you drain a little bit of them back. And that's the theory that I'm standing by.
But apparently you don't remember it. You know, that's the thing, right?
Apparently like, not.
It's just a, yeah, there's a point at which you are conscious and an energy vampire, and prior to that is just gone. I don't know. It's pretty crazy.
But he still remembers his grandma, obviously, because yes. He summons her in the ghost episode.
Well, I don't know. It seems like we're getting enough Colin stuff that hopefully they'll dig more into this, because I do want to know more. I'm going to do a angry Lost style demanding an explanation for things that are not real. I want a real scientific Colin's explanation boat. For this. Yeah.
I haven't seen Lost, but I've heard enough people talk about it that I can make one Lost reference.
How does the island move? Explain it with science. It's like, it's not real. That's the answer. It's magic. Who cares?
Okay. And then, so to resolve the issue with these young vampires, like Nandor's really trying to be nice to them. And then Nadja eventually gets frustrated and just rips one of their hearts out. And then that vampire dies. And then all of the other vampires agree to pay their their vampire fees or whatever. So
feels like that was the only way that one was going to go. They were pretty annoying. They were also, that was like a house full of, if there are Republican vampires, that's like a house that they would make up in their head to get mad at. That's basically what.
Yes.
Everything about it. We don't believe in your way of doing things, man. And just like very multicultural and drinking out of a, doesn't somebody have like a French press for blood or something? I can't remember what there's one point they pour into a coffee mug.
Oh,
and it's,
yeah. Maybe a titrate or something.
Yeah,
it's something. Just,
yeah, it's all. Yeah. Anyway, it's perfectly put together. The guy is fantastically annoying. That's the only way that was ever going to go down, I feel like. So I enjoyed that.
And then the episode ends with Nandor tucking himself in for the night and Nadja's there. And he asks her, do you ever think that there's more to life besides killing? And she says, yes, of course I do. And he says, really? And she says, no, of course I do not. What are you thinking? And then they yell at each other and he slams the coffin closed and that's blackout. Oh, wait, no. She also, at the very end, she puts on the cloak and that's when she becomes Nandor. And she talks about how she's like grabbing his dick and balls. And then he in the coffin goes, stop doing that. And then that's the end of the episode.
But not quite, because in the credits we see that the sire appears to be breaking out of the room. I don't know if you caught that. I've become conditioned by the Marvel.
Our listeners, are going to know that I didn't watch the whole thing.
I've been conditioned by the dumb Marvel stuff for the past 12 years.
Here's the problem,
but I just never let it go.
I watched this live and I ordinarily have like a 10 o'clock bedtime. I, like Colin Robinson, am a morning person, but I was like, no, I'm going to watch this one live. And then I found out it was 11 p.m. and I was like, oh my God. And I barely made it to the end of episode two. So I didn't stick around for the credits.
These are the sacrifices that we make for you, the listener. Okay. Yes. We're out here staying up way past our bedtime.
I had to stay up 2 hours later than normal.
I just want to go back to the gym sequence or the series of attempted pickups, because I love that, you know, there are different reactions to the meathead guy that comes out. And first of all, probably my favorite detail of the whole episode is his face is still blurry. You know, they don't show his face because he probably would not sign a release after getting just completely mashed into the wall by Nandor at the end, I would suspect. Uh-huh. And he seemed pretty uninto it when he said, like, get that camera out of my face right at the beginning. But, Colin Robinson is straight up afraid of him and is running out the door and hitting the wrong, like, trying to go out the in door.
And he falls into the trash cans.
And then Laszlo is, you know, defiant in all, basically getting chucked out as well. And then Nandor reacts by, after being kind of, first of all,
Nandor goes.
The real Nandor. They all after they flame out do the little hand twirl you'll remember nothing move, which not clear if it works or not. I guess if it does work, that's
also why not use it on the guy. But
yeah,
I'm not a vampire. Maybe it has to like regenerate. There's a cooldown time like in a video game.
I mean, if it does work, that would explain why she doesn't get pissed off every time he comes in.
It for sure works. I just don't know why they can't use it on the big muscle man who throws
while he's
out.
While he's like a foot away and he just stops. He's like, I was going to smash something. Hang on. Okay. And then Nandor storms out and says, fucking guy, which I thought was the funniest line.
I love that has like become Nandor's sort of catchphrase. Is every once in a while just go, this fucking guy.
And that's what I say when something annoying happens as well. So, yeah, it fits perfectly. Yeah, I would spend an entire episode just in the Chamber of Curiosities because I can't imagine all the stuff that's in there that they could just come up with. That would be, you know, obviously Van Helsing's dick is in there.
Yep, yeah. Is the original Van Helsing's penis, and Guillermo holds it and is grossed out by it. And Nandor's like, I would like to hold my great-great-grandfather's penis.
Did you think he was going to drop it? I kind of thought he was going to drop it.
I thought he was going to drop it.
Yeah.
He's too smooth. Guillermo's too smooth. We've seen him, like, kill vampires in a flurry of fists and stakes. He's not going to drop a glass penis jar.
We did see him fall off the balcony in the library and crash through a bunch of stuff. And then Laszlo...
Which was pretty funny.
Laszlo barely reacts to what's happening because he's too busy with the porno. And then... at one point, he said he warns Guillermo not to look at it because apparently this stuff is this stuff is so intense you wouldn't be able to handle it. This written word porno, and he says otherwise it'll be suicide by porno, which is a fun thought. Yeah. Personally,
also one of the books he's reading is called the Nobnomicon, which is great.
Yeah. So oh yeah, funny. We get a great list of names. I didn't write any of them down, but I do like the Poetics 2. Is that a euphemism? And then he no, and then drops the book.
The opposite. No, it's just Poetics. Roy Cohn, Esquire's 169 Sex Positions from 1954 is very funny.
Yes. So that's quite a collection. I want to know, you know, porno aside, yeah, all the gear in there. As you know, it feels like, you know, as somebody who played a lot of video games as a kid, it's very like, you know, I want to so many. Artifacts you want to get at the end of a dungeon in the big chest in Zelda. Yeah. That's basically what I'm picturing, all these different things. Think yes. of all the different abilities they can get with all this stuff if they put it in their inventory. It's thrilling to think about.
Yeah. It's also just, we need a plot for this week. There's an item here. Deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's very fun. There's a lot of fun potential there.
The energy vampire thing is definitely the thing I want to keep an eye on because Colin was going to do research into his lineage. And I don't really know where that kind of shook out. He kind of was just talking about it, but he doesn't really seem to know. He says, was I turned or was I, in the words of Stephanie Germanotta, born this way is what he.
So that's, funny.
That's his the ultimate question, really. You know, nature, nurture. I guess I want to know more about the council and about the dues, you know, because these guys are, I guess. Is it like a protection racket? Like what are the dues? You know, what's the threat of the dues is just you have to pay dues or we'll kill you. You know, what are the benefits of, I guess, being in the vampire organization?
Well, probably health insurance, collective bargaining.
Yeah.
I suspect that there's, I mean, you know, they put on this huge theatrical performance occasionally. That costs money.
That's true.
I mean, they have to have gotten all of their real estate. For, you know, creepy Victorian houses with gigantic dungeon basements from somewhere. I think if you, you know, steal too many places, it eventually becomes suspicious to the neighbors. And then you got property taxes and you know, a lot of logistical concerns.
Yeah.
But also, we don't know exactly. Do they say what they're paying in? Are they paying? Is it like you must provide us with virgins or something?
Yeah, I don't.
Or is it like dollars?
Truthfully, I don't remember. I don't think they say a method of. I mean, do they take Bitcoin? You know, Bitcoin. There we go.
I mean, for sure that young energy vampire would, and he'd be happy to tell you about it.
Oh yeah, that guy's yeah, yeah. I got a camera drone. People hate it. That was a very good line as well. That's a
boy. I just a total tangent. I've been going to this co-working space recently, and a guy who works there found out that I'm a writer, and he sent me his screenplay, and it's. Exactly what you would expect from that kind of guy. And then I ran into him again and he was like, did you like it? I'm thinking about shooting the whole thing on my drone. And I was like, oh, cool. Good for you.
You got drained a little bit.
Oh, my God. I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
I'm the victim of I'm the energy vampire in this equation. And he drained me.
Yeah. You trying to drain me, bro?
That's fucking guy.
And
And that is episodes 1 and 2 of What We Do in the Shadows. Thank you so much for joining us. Next week, we'll be chatting about episode 3, titled Gale, where apparently an old flame returns and an ancient vehicle is resurrected, some of which we have seen in the trailers. So I'm excited to find out where that goes.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. It really helps people find out about the show. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Patty Mo, and follow Nicole on Twitter at Nicole Conlon, and on Instagram at the Nicole Conlon. I don't know why.
And if anybody knows the 14-year-old Australian girl who has at Nicole Conlon and hasn't used it for years, I would love to have that handle. FYI.
We're making a plea to the universe.
Please, if you are in Australia and know the Australian Nicole Conlon, but there's two, one of whom is an adult, and I keep getting emails about her kids from their school. Regardless, don't forget to visit thedip.com to stay up to date on all sorts of pop culture. That's thedipp.com. You can follow The Dip on Instagram at The Dip.
Bat?
One day it's going to work.
Your favorite band's about to play a sold-out show. You got in.
Over here.
With a friend. And found a spot close enough to see the set list. They're definitely playing your song. When you're with Amex, it's not if it's going to happen, but when. American Express. Don't live life without it.
Planning on traveling this summer? Make saving at the pump part of your plans with 2x the fuel points from Harris Teeter. It's easy. Download your eVic coupon, and for every dollar you spend with your Vic card, you'll get 2 fuel points. That's up to $1 per gallon on quality fuel at participating BP and Harris Teeter fuel centers. Download your eVic coupon today and save money at the pump all summer long with eVic and Harris Teeter fuel points.